Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious. If there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, we are instructed by St. Paul to think about these things, a very worthy New Year's resolution, if you're still napping those things out. And I believe St. Paul would also add that we should talk about these things, not just think about them. That is what we try to do on Call Me Catholic every Saturday, talk about the good stuff. I am Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times, so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. And you know that I keep only the very best company in this studio. That would be Jimmy G to start with. He is my engineer par excellence and my chief fact checker. How's this new year treating you, Jimmy G?
So far, so good. I remember what you said about the St. Paul. If he was around today, the radio show and the reach that he would have.
Oh, yes, right? I know. And he would utilize it. He would be all over that social media.
It'd be incredible.
Hey, speaking of social media, we have a live stream of the show going on right now. We got cameras in the studio. And if you'd like to watch us and hear us, and if, you know, if you're near a computer, I don't want you doing this in your car, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Call Me Catholic, and Marvelous Matt, our studio assistant, has put up a link, and it will take you right to a webpage that has the show going on. You can see what's going on in our tiny little studio.
So much activity.
I know, and we, and you won't see that we are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope. You can't see our view from up here. We indeed are on the 8th floor of the Tower of Hope on the elegant and inspiring Christ Cathedral campus. A hub of activity going on all the time, literally command central for the Diocese of Orange. We're nestled in there between Los Angeles and San Diego counties.
It just dawned on me that one day we could probably have like a drone fly around the tower when the show starts.
Well, I mean, so. I think there are drones that fly around. I see them sometimes.
We could get that camera view.
Yeah, because they have some beautiful photographs of the campus that they're using to sort of keep people apprised of the progress. We're rebuilding the cathedral. We're keeping the cathedral, Reverend Schuller's beautiful cathedral, intact on the exterior. Right. But of course, we're bringing it to its full glory as a place of Catholic worship. That is something to look for.
Oh, it's going to be outstanding.
Yeah, yeah, that's very exciting. Hey, Jimmy G and I, as I said, are coming to you from the Tower of Hope. And since I like to give you guys little weather reports every week, I want to mention that we've had some nice,
we got some rain.
Chilly weather and rain. I know. I mean, I'm always complaining about the dryness, and meanwhile, people are just freezing to death in other parts of the country. But, you know, unfortunately, it brought with it some very bad effects for the people in the fire-struck areas, especially Montecito. Terrible mudslides. My goodness, those were harrowing pictures of the mud just wiping out those beautiful homes in Montecito. And there were those first responders again, those firemen in their, you know, in their gear, heavy gear, their hazmat gear, just trudging through the mud, trying to find bodies and save people. God bless them and keep them safe. Mother Nature has definitely kept us on our toes this fall and winter season. Okay, so here we are at the beginning of a new year. January is a month of promise and expectation. We're thinking, what's this year ahead hold for us? And as a new year begins, we can look on the previous year and assess it in its totality. That story is written, kind of like a life. When a life ends, you really see the lessons that you can learn from that life, the inspirations to draw from, what that person was all about. And we can do that with our years, too. Some years we want to just throw away. Some years we say, hey, I learned a lot. I experienced a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we all, you know, we look ahead and we make plans. We have ambitions and goals and things we want to do in the next 12 months. But then, you know what? Sometimes life happens and people or circumstances or even world events interrupt our agenda. And we find ourselves kind of saying to God, hey, I'm trying to work here. I'm trying to move ahead and this stuff keeps getting in the way. Or maybe you get a prompting to pursue something that wasn't part of your annual plan. And you think, what am I supposed to do with this? Well, what we learn in our pursuit of what we think we're supposed to be doing every year is that God has his plan for us too. And his providence will sometimes wreak havoc on our personal list of goals and expectations. No, so how do we respond to those interruptions? I mean, you know, I could tell you how you should respond, but they always take us by surprise. And I think the best we can do is just adjust our stride and respect that this is the road that we are supposed to be on. You know, I worked for a man early after my college graduation. His name was Ernie Hahn, and he built big shopping centers. And he was a very, very successful man in an industry that was kind of, he was a pioneer in that industry at the time. He was building the big mega malls. And I spent a lot of time with him because I did marketing. And I said to him, Mr. Hahn, how did you end up doing this? Was this always what you expected to do? And he said, no, no. He said, I was a bank clerk first in my professional life. And he said, I had this motto that I would just, I didn't know what I wanted to do or where my future was going, but that I was going to take every day and do the very best with what was put in front of me. So he said, if that's a job, then you're going to do the best with the tasks of that job. You're going to be the best person you can be with the people that you encounter every day and learn the lessons, and your future will just unfold. And then that, I always thought that was very sage advice.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, today on Call Me Catholic, we have a great guest, brilliant, really, who will shed some light on how to discern the work that God has intended for you. Nancy Berry is currently the founder and president of Enterprise Solutions to Poverty, also known as ESP. ESP works with developing nations to build inclusive businesses and finance opportunities. She was formerly president of Women's World Banking, where she reached out to low-income women around the world to help them establish self-sustaining businesses. Nancy Berry has a very impressive dossier of awards and achievements and accomplishments, which you're going to hear more about in her introduction. They are all testaments of how she has dedicated her professional life to bringing her Catholic values to the world economy. So that's coming up in just a minute. But first up, you know, we have to address the Call Me Catholic countdown of the week, which today will be the top five ways we can discern God's presence behind our calls to action. Now, tomorrow in the first reading from the Old Testament, Sunday's liturgy, is one of my very favorite, you know, really picturesque stories from the Old Testament. It's the story of Samuel, who is Hannah's son. And he is going to sleep one night in the priest Eli is nearby. And as he falls asleep, he hears his name being called. Samuel, Samuel. So he gets up and he goes over to Eli and he says, did you call me? And Eli says, no, I didn't. Go back to bed. Happens again. And he hears his name. He goes into Eli. Are you calling me? He says, no, go back to bed. Third time. So finally, Eli says, you know, I'm not calling you, but if you're hearing your name that distinctly, this must be God calling you.
Wow.
So, next time you hear your name called in your sleep, get up and say, I'm your servant, Lord. I'm listening. Speak to me. Uh-huh. And I love that because I think sometimes we get those calls and we think, no, that's not for me. That's not for me. That's somebody else's ambition, or that doesn't fit with my life right now. And so God has to call us sometimes 3-4 times before we understand, yep, that's, he's talking to me and I should be listening. So how do you know that God's calling you and it's not just your own hubris or worse, the evil one luring you into another direction? Well, we all have to discover our own ways of judging, assessing these inclinations. But for today, here is my top five Call Me Catholic countdown ways of discerning if that's God's call or if it's your call.
The Call Me Catholic countdown.
Catholic countdown. Okay, number five. Okay, so this is an obvious one. Are you praying? Because prayer really can enlighten us, affirm us, and certainly keeps us headed in the right direction. And sometimes in prayer, God reveals his wishes for us, his hopes for us, his will for us. So my first suggestion on the bottom of the list would be, say, if you're not praying, then you should be praying, because prayer really does align us with God's will. Okay, number four would be, does it fit? I mean, you know, if I were to come home right now and say to my husband, I know that I should be right now trying to climb Mount Everest. I mean, I know, I just, it's in my blood. I need to do this. Well, my husband would send me back to bed and call in the psychiatric help, because that's really nothing.
He'd get that look on his face.
It's just not a fit. It's not a fit for me. It's not a fit for our life. It's certainly not a fit for anything that I hope to accomplish in my life. Okay, number three, do you have a sense of peace with it? Is it bringing you peace or is it bringing you agitation? So I think good inclinations, God's will always bring a sense of peace. Maybe there's that moment of agitation where you think, wait, is he really asking me to get involved in this charity? Is he really asking me to change my profession and go in this direction? I think first the agitation comes, but that's just kind of an excitement at the idea of a new prospect in your life. But I think God's will comes with peace. Okay, number two, look at the positives and negatives that it would yield. I think you can go back to the list. Okay, should I be homeschooling my kids? Is that real or is that just a trend I'm being drawn to? Now, you sit down, you list it, and once again, you go back and say, does it fit? Look at the negatives and look at the positives. And the number one thing I would say is it going to bring value to the world, to your surroundings, to the people you know? I mean, does it have value or is it just a frivolous inclination? Am I saying, you know, I want to give up this radio show and take tap dancing instead? Well, that's not going to bring any value to anyone, I assure you.
A lot of people were screaming, no, Peggy, do not give up the shoes.
Step away from the tap shoes. Okay, well, maybe some of you are already encountering choices and decisions you weren't expecting this year. I hope that this Call Me Catholic Countdown provides you with some motivation for considering whether this is God's call in your life. But I would suggest you seek spiritual guidance. We are not professional counselors here on Call Me Catholic. We are not licensed. We're not like Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck.
The opinions of projected on this program are Peggy's and Peggy's alone.
No, we are just about the conversation. But hey, that's who we are. Now, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic. You need no credentials for that. Give us a like and join our family, facebook.com/callmecatholic. We love seeing our listener comments and questions, and you might like seeing some of the pictures and other things that we include on there. Okay. Today, we've got a fantastic guest you're going to love. Nancy Berry is the president and founder of Enterprise Solutions for Poverty, a beautifully noble plan to bring business and financial opportunities to people in developing nations. She's got some stories to tell you, and you want to hear that. So stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Oh, hello out there, friends and countrymen. I am Peggy Normandin, and this is Call Me Catholic 2018 edition. In tomorrow's gospel, we see the magnetism of Jesus, how his followers were so instantly drawn to him and wanted to be with him. They didn't know what the future held, what Jesus would ask of them, but they were immediately committed to his mission and were willing to set aside all other life's ambitions to follow him. Most Christians understand that moment when you know that your plans have been hijacked by God. He has something else in mind for you. Our guest today understood early in her educational journey that God was going to use her incredible knowledge and promising career to make a difference to poor people around the world who just need a financial break to support themselves and their families. Nancy Berry is the founder and president of Enterprise Solutions to Poverty, known as ESP. ESP works with companies and banks around the world to build inclusive businesses and finance. Previously, Nancy was president of Women's World Banking, where she dramatically increased financial resources to low-income women and households in the major emerging markets. And prior to that, Nancy Berry spent 15 years with the World Bank, where she pioneered its work on small enterprise programs. Nancy is a graduate of Stanford University with a degree in economics and earned her MBA from Harvard Business School. She's received far too many awards and honors to list, but suffice it to say that she was one of Forbes' top 100 most powerful women in the world. Jimmy G, we need to get our smarts on today.
Wow.
Nancy Berry, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you, Peggy.
Hey.
And Jimmy.
We're so grateful to have you here. I mean, we really upped the bar here on our guest, on our guest qualifications. So now, Nancy, most graduates with your fine pedigree would immediately gravitate toward a Goldman Sachs or a Deloitte. But you chose a different path. Was there a moment where you thought, I want to do something different with my banking and finance knowledge?
Peggy, I think that I really had no choice given my family. I had an uncle who was a priest who marched with Cesar Chavez and ran a very vibrant parish in Claremont. When he died, I said he would have been a cardinal, except he was too much like Christ. And got in a little trouble with the cardinal who was there at the time.
Okay.
A great aunt who ran the hospitals in Los Angeles,
Sister Mary Esther.
And then, of course, my parents. You know, my dad was a deacon who, between being a management engineering consultant, helped Latinos get jobs and meditated for an hour a day and gave the best sermons. They were 3-minute consulting sermons, always with a message. And my mom, who was the anchor for the 5 kids, she said the rosary every day. They both went to mass every day. And so when I went to Stanford, it was kind of an obvious thing for me to jump on a freighter to Peru with no job at the other end. Fortunately, there was a guy from Cornell who, after we said in very broken Spanish, a friend of mine and I, nosotros trabajamos muy fuerte, he said, oh, do you? And gave us a job.
No, so we work very hard?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And so we got to live in the slums, work with an all-Peruvian team, develop water, sewage, light, and small business. My dad and mom actually came and danced with the locals.
Oh,
and so I studied.
So how old were you at that point?
I was 21,
21
when I left.
And you had not gone on to, had you gone on to Harvard Business
School? Not yet.
Okay.
I actually studied for my HBS MBA exam in Spanish in Peru.
Wow.
In a place that had no water, sewage, and light. And so when I ended up in Boston, I was what we call a Latin in my heart. Mm-hmm. So I was not ready for this East Coast culture where it takes until December before anybody says hello. And I was lucky enough to get a job working for McKinsey, the big consulting firm, but in Tanzania on how to make villages economically viable.
Wow.
And then joined the Young Professional Program at the World Bank after Harvard Business School. And I didn't really apply. I got a job, an offer to work from McKinsey any place on earth. I didn't apply any place else except the World Bank, and worked there very happily for 15 years.
Yeah, so, where? In Peru?
No, I was based in Washington.
Okay.
But I was able to use the fact that I had worked for 2 years on small business development to become the quote-unquote World Bank expert on small business development, and wrote the policy, and we ended up building the Small Enterprise Development Program at the World Bank to 3 billion people all over Asia, Latin America, and Africa.
We're talking with Nancy Berry, who is the president of Enterprise Solutions to Poverty, along with a lot of other things she is. She's a most remarkable woman. If you would like to jump into the conversation, I'm going to throw out the number now. We've got Marvelous Matt at the dial there, ready to pick up your call and patch you into the conversation. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. We'd love to have you join the conversation. So, Nancy, it was always about, you were always using your knowledge to help people in emerging nations build themselves up through business. It wasn't about a charity. It was about helping them learn how to support themselves.
That's exactly right, Peggy. And I'm so happy that you picked up on that, because one of the things in the work on working with banks on making loans to small business, or setting up a Products of Nepal office in New York, pulling in all of the importers that then develop the whole carpet industry of Nepal into a billion-dollar industry, or working at Women's World Banking, making loans of $100, $500 to millions of low-income women, the point of that is, if it's not financially viable, it's not going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may reach a couple of hundred women, but you have to be able to pay for it. And so in Women's World Banking, these little not-for-profits ended up becoming banks without migrating away from serving low-income women and men. And many of them now have millions of clients for a single institution.
Hmm. Well, it's not just, though, about the money, because they've got to learn a trade. How do you, once they have the money, the resource, don't they also have to learn how to manage it and how to learn their trade and how to operate a business?
Well, Ila Bhatt of India, who was the chair of Women's World Banking for many years, said to me, most poor people have to create their own enterprise because nobody's offering them a job. And so when they get a loan of $100, they know exactly what to do with it. And so if you're trying to help somebody move from a survival-based business to a robust small and medium business, that's where training really comes in handy.
Right.
Or mentoring, seeing somebody that had one small bakery and now has a chain of bakeries in Medellin. You know, that getting to know how she did that can be very helpful. But most low-income women that may have a cow, may be selling oranges in the market, they may be processing oranges for orange juice, they know exactly what to do with $100.
This is what comes naturally to
them.
And they're probably much more responsible with $100 than someone who has a lot of money.
Absolutely. And that's something that we really hammered in the early days of Women's World Banking, that low-income women are probably the world's best credit risks. I mean, our throughout, in whether it be in Kenya or in Bangladesh or in Colombia, These women had a 99% on-time repayment rate.
Is that right? Very impressive. So they're not a risk.
They really aren't. I mean, what each of these microfinance institutions has their own system for evaluating the woman on the or man on the basis of character, the nature of the enterprise, the economics of the household. Mm-hmm. And often people in that, at that level do a lot of different things. We had a big global meeting of women's rural banking in the Dominican Republic, and there was a pregnant woman who was talking about how she rented a room, she made tortillas, and she sold them in the market. And a Pakistani businessman who was on the board of one of our affiliates said, "Excuse me, madam, but you really need to focus." You know, the good MBA argument, you know.
And it says here in my textbook.
And her 6-year-old son was listening to the simultaneous translation as this little pregnant lady listened respectfully to the guy. And she said, "I hate to tell you, but if I had focused on any one of my businesses sometime in the last 10 years, I would have gone bankrupt." Mm-hmm. So she knew all about risk management.
Yeah, exactly. And she was making it work.
Exactly.
Well, now you're into some interesting countries and you're dealing with some interesting cultures. Have you ever faced opposition to what you're trying to do, like helping women sustain themselves through business and work?
The answer is really no. I mean, women's rural banking works in Muslim countries and Hindu countries and Christian countries. And in many countries, particularly Muslim countries, women traditionally have not had a big role outside of the household. Mm-hmm. And so there is often a need, and even in Hindu culture, sometimes women are not treated that well. And so the microfinance institutions that interface with these women have to be smart in terms of how they deal with their husbands. Mm-hmm. But very soon the husbands see that the woman is contributing to the economics of the household. In about 50% of the cases, men join the business of the women because it's better than his being a construction worker on a random basis. Yeah. And so it is a process. And, you know, we have in the Dominican Republic, many of these women are married to men through these civil marriages that may have more than one wife.
Uh-huh.
And so part of what I find to be the beauty of microfinance and women's rural banking is that these sons tend to be better than their dads, if you know what I mean.
Yes,
by
yes,
seeing
I
a strong woman that deserves respect, the husband may take care of the food, but the wife takes care of the education, buys one bag of cement at a time to build the house. Mm-hmm. So most of these children of these women do not go into tiny businesses. They get their education, go to university. So it's in an intergenerational way, it can have a huge impact.
But what an incredible work ethic they've observed. And work ethic is really what's going to fuel the future.
Exactly.
You know, we had a nun, a little sister come to one of our church services, and she was telling us, she was raising money for a program that she had in India that would equip women with sewing machines. And she was saying that a widow, when a woman loses her husband in India, in this particular region where she was, that they had no status, they had no ranking anymore, and they couldn't even get jobs. So she was trying to give them sewing machines because they did know how to make beautiful saris and import them, or export them and sell them. And I thought, yeah, a sewing machine, that's a simple thing that's really can change a person's life. But is that true in some cultures where the women don't have any standings? I mean, they don't. I thought that was sort of sounded really archaic.
Yeah, I mean, the whole world is changing. You know, in rural India, in Enterprise Solutions to Poverty, we work with 70 major agribusinesses and banks on creating shared value for 20 million farmers by 2020. One of those programs is called FALI, or the Future Agriculture Leaders of India. These are 8th and 9th graders in thousands of schools of rural India who are learning based on a U.S. program, Future Farmers of America, interactive learning, no lectures. They all have greenhouses in their school. They grow things. They make businesses, and they infect their parents with modern agriculture, which was not even an objective at the outset. And
it's interesting how these things bear other fruit that affirms what a good movement it is.
And at that age, the winners of all the business plan contests are the girls. This is rural India.
Yeah.
And I was very shocked because I had not gone that deeply into understanding the next generation. So I think we're talking about a sea change in the role of girls and women.
I want you to hold that thought, Nancy, because there is so much to cover here.
Okay.
And we're going to go to a break. I want to tell our listeners that we are certainly going to continue our conversation with Nancy Berry, president and founder of Enterprise Solutions to Poverty. She has a lot more stories to share with us. And you are welcome to join the dialogue. You can call in with your questions or comments, and I know you have them, to 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. Give us a call, and we would love to have your comments included in our conversation. I am Peggy Norman, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Hello, kids, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am Peggy Normanton, and I am so honored to have a very distinguished guest with us in the studio today. You know I love meeting and talking with Catholics who are not afraid to wear their faith on their sleeve and take it into the workplace with them. Nancy Berry so embodies the values of our faith and has used them to fuel her professional projectile. Nancy is president and founder of Enterprise Solutions to Poverty, known as ESP. It's an organization that brings companies and financial resources on board with her mission to provide loans to poor people around the world, people who just need some financial and informational help to get themselves up and on their feet and supporting themselves. If you would like to join our conversation, I'm sure Nancy would love to field your questions. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. You may have a question. I have a question. What are some of the really some surprises you discovered along the way, like when you arrived at a country having expectations of this skill or these opportunities and something else came around?
Well, I've been at this for about 40 years, Peggy. So one of the things, as Thomas Friedman wrote several years ago now, the world is flat.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have found in emerging markets is tremendous poverty and tremendous growth and development. So, for example, one of my favorite companies that we work with in India is called Jain Irrigation. And it was started by a guy in the 70s based upon his having graduated from college and coming from a tiny village, going back to his mom saying, I've gotten a job to work for the government. Do you think I should take it? And his mom said, you know, anybody can work for the government. Anybody can even start a small business and help their family. But nobody is paying attention to the small farmers of India. Nobody is paying attention to conserving water. So why don't you just focus on that through business solutions? So fast forward to today. This is a billion-dollar company.
Wow.
It's the second largest drip irrigation company in the world. It has transformed through drip irrigation millions of small farms in India and in other countries. And then about 10 years ago, they got deeper and deeper into fruits and vegetables. So they are the largest mango pulp exporter. But then they created tissue cultures, these tiny test tubes that are natural. It's nothing artificial, but getting the best rootstock for bananas. And now they do 60 million of these banana tissue cultures a year.
Wow.
And that has transformed the desert of Jalgaon, the area surrounding this Jain irrigation, into something that looks like Israel, which was also a desert. So you look at the chairman who died a year ago, and he's got Gandhi, He's got Nehru, the founder of India, and he's got J.R.D. Tata, the guy that really created modern industrial India, on his wall. And so what I have really seen is the tremendous transformational power of small enterprise. All these students that are future agriculture leaders of India want to know, how did you do it, you know, as a source of inspiration for them. So what I have found is that whether these leaders are Hindu or Muslim or Catholic, in my work, which is very much about helping poor farmers get rich, helping families transform their lives, all of it is rooted in trying to fulfill God's purpose for us on earth. And in fact, I'll never forget, I was in Honduras years ago in a Women's World Banking regional meeting, and there were five women in my room, the leaders of Women's World Banking in Colombia, Dominican Republic, Honduras, Chile, etc. And they saw a book on the Holy Spirit at my bedside. And they said, we all looked around, and it turned out that when we were growing up, everybody in our families thought we would not only become nuns, that we would become the heads of our order. And here
or found a new order.
Yeah, and here we were, you know, and I told this story to a guy on the in the Italian press after that, and he said, oh, so you're talking about evangelical banking.
That's not exactly right, but it certainly is the spirit. You know, I want to pull a quote that I read that you said in an article that was written about you, and I think it's so beautiful. You said, when you connect with a purpose greater than yourself, you are fearless, you think big, and you think beyond yourself. And that certainly pertains to the man that you spoke of who established the Jane agriculture or irrigation system.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, but we're so afraid sometimes to let that go. You know, we just always kind of feel like we need to protect ourselves, and the risk taking is, you know, we're afraid that it's going to set us back a little bit. Hey, Nancy, we have a call, so I want you to put on your earphones there. I'd like to welcome Marianne from Virginia onto the show. Hi, Marianne. Welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hi, Peggy. Actually, I just happened to be sitting in a parking lot and heard your show, going on with Nancy Berry, and just really, very interested because, my husband and I actually do invest in a small microfinance company called Jumpstart Africa, which is, in Uganda. And, I went there this summer to visit and talk with and encourage some of these ladies in their small businesses. And when I saw, first of all, how hard they work and how, what beautiful products they make, dresses and jewelry and purses, shoes, sandals made out of tire tread, for instance, so my thought was, wow, they're making such beautiful things, and they really do use these loans well. I mean, they know how to make every penny count.
Yeah, I think Nancy would definitely agree with that.
Marianne, that's so cool that you were able to actually go and connect with these women.
Yeah, well, this has been something that has been on our hearts for a really long time, and we were able to connect up with someone in Uganda, frankly, who has the smarts to do this. So we were the first investors in this, and they have more investors now. My question is, we'd like to do more than just invest. We'd like to have an avenue for these ladies to have a larger market for their products other than just there in Uganda. We'd like to, you know, provide a market here. We have absolutely no idea how to do that.
Well, that's a very good,
you know what? Do you have any suggestions?
That's fascinating, Miriam, because I bet a lot of people are listening to Nancy thinking, man, I'd like to do something like this. I'd like to make a difference. How would you begin to advise somebody to get involved in this kind of a movement, Nancy?
Well, I think Marianne had a very good point. Trying to figure out where you have the skills to actually make a contribution is critically important. And I think, Marianne, you were super smart in finding somebody local that, as you put it, had the smarts. In the case of Women's World Banking, I think one of the reasons that we were able to increase the number of women from 20,000 to 23 million in a period of 15 years was because we relied on local talent, local institutions, local women who really understood their market. And so if you don't have the marketing talent, I would not suggest that you try to help them market. I would suggest that you try to find somebody that understands marketing and really help them. I mean, the great thing, if you go online today, you can find a lot of great Kenyan, Ugandan, Ghanaian handicrafts because there have been people like you that have seen that there are gorgeous things that you would want to have in your home. And so maybe you can do research finding out who those organizations are that are already out there that could extend their network to the organization that you're supporting.
That's good counsel. Would you agree, Marianne?
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much for your call, and thank you for the work you're doing with Jumpstart Africa. I think that's awesome, and I think that's a beautiful attitude, and we are living in a global village. So it's great to appreciate the talents and the gifts that come from other cultures and other countries, and thank you for that. And thanks for calling in today, Marianne.
Okay, thank you. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Is that
two for one? It's a two-for-one day.
Okay, thanks. I can search online. Are there organizations already that that you can think of that we could relationship with? I'm using that as a verb, but can you think of any group right offhand that we could?
Well, I can, maybe Nancy would disagree with this, but I know that Catholic Relief Services goes into lots of countries. And I know recently they were very active in Colombia, helping some of the coffee bean growers understand the great value of niche coffee beans, that coffee is very popular and people pay a lot of money for coffee here in the United States. And so they were there advising them and helping them market their coffee beans to this market. So I know you could look into Catholic Relief Services. They have a very active website, and they can tell you about a lot of things they're doing in other countries to help people develop businesses and support themselves.
Okay.
Do you have any other ideas,
thanks, Nancy?
No, I think Marianne, if you go online, you will very quickly see who the leaders are. But I would share, I think, the Catholic Relief Services has great operations in many countries, and increasingly they are also more commercially oriented, recognizing the importance of business.
Yeah. But your awareness is the first step. So, when you become aware and curious, it's amazing how things will start to pop out at you, news stories and websites and things like that. So keep going in that direction, Marianne. I think you're on to something.
Thank you both so much.
God bless you.
Very interesting for program today. God bless you.
Thank you very much, Marianne. Thanks
God
for listening.
Bless you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
I would agree. I think you're a very interesting guest, Nancy. and guess what? People are listening. We have another call here that is coming in from Florida. Anne Marie is joining us. Hi, Anne Marie. Welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hi, this is Anne Marie in Pensacola, Florida. I attend Little Flower Catholic Church. Father Matt is so good to us. What I'm calling about is I wanted to hear what would be the first thing that you would do I was listening about Marianne, but I'm more interested about the sewing machines. How do we need to get these sewing machines to some people?
Well, I think Nancy's picture is bigger.
Yeah. No, Anne-Marie, I think that it's very important to recognize that we can all support in our own ways, but often the sewing machine is not the answer. There are sewing machines throughout rural Latin America, rural Africa, rural India today, and they may not have been 20 years ago. So I think it becomes important to either find an organization that you can support financially, or as the previous caller said, find an organization where you can get involved directly. But really, you know, as we were saying earlier, part of finding the purpose in our life is to find out what our talents are and how we can best contribute that, those. So it may be money. It may be the capacity to manage one of these organizations. It may be the ability to market. But, you know, if you're talking about reaching very large numbers of low-income women, it's important to think big.
But you know what? Your heart is in the right place, Anne Marie. And like I told Mary Ann, if you just, if you have an inclination, a generous inclination like that, opportunities are going to present themselves to you.
And Catholic Relief is a good one to start with first. Yeah. You had said with, Miss Mary Ann.
Yeah.
I thank y'all so much and I think it's wonderful what y'all are doing and keep doing it by the radio. There's still people that listen to the radio.
That's right. We're counting on it, aren't we, Jimmy G?
That's right.
Oh,
that's
please.
Right.
Thank you, Anne Marie. God bless you.
Thank
and
you,
happy
Anne-Marie.
New Year. Okay. What, Nancy, in your work with so many different people and so many different cultures and so many different professionals, what are some of the misconceptions that frustrate you the most in dealing with, in bringing enterprise opportunities and resources to low-income people around the world?
One of the things that I feel most strongly about, and I think this is very important in our world today, is to recognize that we have more in common than separates us. Mm-hmm. That's why I love to tell the stories about low-income women having been dealt a much more limited deck of cards than I have been in my life, mm-hmm. and having the capacity to do much more with much less. So one of my favorite stories is Chandaben in India, who is a used clothing saleswoman, tough as nails. And we gave a conference in 1996 with 90 finance ministers, central bank governors, and heads of commercial banks. And it was chaired by the then finance minister of India, who went on to become the prime minister, Manmohan Singh. Very humble guy, very simple guy, lovely guy, who got into some trouble later with due to the politics of others. But in starting the meeting, I did not start the meeting. Ila Bhatt, the chair of Women's World Banking, did not start the meeting. But Chandaben, the used clothing saleswoman, started the meeting. Mm-hmm. And she spoke no English. And most of these finance ministers did not speak Hindi. But we did not need to translate. We did, but we did not need to translate because she had her finger pointed at the finance minister telling him how to run India. So then she came to Beijing to the first, to the UN conference on women. And at that meeting, I thought we were very bonded. So I said, Chandaben, I understand you're coming to Washington, D.C. Why don't you come to New York and you can stay with me for the weekend? Thinking I was being very cool, mm-hmm. you know, to extend this offer. And she said, can you help me organize a container to ship used clothing back to India?
She wasn't going to get all caught up in your hospitality. She wanted something more concrete.
Exactly.
Well, and did you?
No, she never made it to New York. But
okay. Well, there was a woman with ambition. There was a woman who had had great drive and very serious work ethic.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how do American women measure up to all this, these impressive models that you've been sharing with us today?
Well, we as American women, I think, have been given a tremendous gift, mm-hmm. because we are expected to succeed in our families, in our life, in our work, which is not always the case in other countries and is not always the case for some families in this country. Mm-hmm. But one thing that is quite fascinating is that we, and this is the learning to respect each other. We had affiliates of Women's World Banking in the United States when I took over in 1990, yes. Mm-hmm. And there were seven of them in Ohio, in Maine, in Philadelphia. And they were all very poorly performing. just, you know, 10 clients, 20 clients. And we had a management training institute where we pulled African, Latin American, Asian, and U.S. women together. And the African women started saying to the woman from Ohio who was presenting her business plan, you know, you're trying to be all things to all women.
You know, bingo! That was a very intuitive woman. There
you're
you go.
You're doing healthcare and you're doing small business and you're doing job training. Why don't you focus? And the woman from Ohio was incensed.
Wow.
And she tried to take it. And later she whispered to me, they'll understand in about 5 years. Well, in about 5 years, the woman from Kenya who had made this comment was running an organization that had 300,000 clients, and the woman from Akron was no longer operating a microfinance institution.
Was in a psychiatric ward. Yeah, that is very interesting because I've heard it said that busy is the new kind of status symbol. And you know, a lot of women like to say, I'm very busy. I've got so many things going on. But these other cultures, they have a more a precise focus ability, you know, where they can really drill down onto something and say, this is what I'm trying to accomplish. They don't have all these other distractions. How important is technology in all of this? And is technology reaching all these places where you are bringing business enterprise to?
Yeah, it's very interesting. We just did a big study last year on mobile banking and big data, creating big solutions. And I think it is definitely coming. Most poor people in rural areas of emerging markets have mobile phones, but they're not yet doing their banking apps on the phone. So I kind of come back, you know, Women's World Banking, I think what we did really well is create people-to-people networks, and what the microfinance organizations in the network continue to do well is they may have, the loan officer may have a smartphone and is able to actually be a branch transacting, you know, taking savings, providing the full loan transaction in real time.
That's a lot of power in one phone.
Exactly. So it's not yet the woman sitting in the village doing her own banking.
Yeah.
So you have to adapt. Nice. And, you know, I, long, long time ago, I was the keynote speaker at a Silicon Alley conference. And so these were all these young, emerging Bill Gates.
Dot-com guys.
It was at St. John the Divine, Episcopalian Cathedral in New York. And I basically talked about the importance of human networks to all of these techies. And it was
good for you. That's a very powerful message and one that really needs to start penetrating. Yeah,
exactly.
But I mean, nevertheless, technology is the way we gain so much quick access to other nations that are so far away. Yeah. And I think our kids who have had semesters abroad and travel more than previous generations are going to appreciate this movement even more than we do, Nancy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do. Well, I have to thank you so much, and I hate to say goodbye, but we are coming to the end of our hour, and I hope you will come back again and talk to us, continue this conversation.
Would love to.
Because I'm going to go to bed tonight with all these questions I wish I'd asked Nancy, and so will our listeners. But thank you so much for coming, and God bless your mission, and God bless your parents. God bless their souls, and God bless them for modeling such extraordinary humanitarian values and good Catholic values.
Thanks so much, Peggy and Jimmy.
Keep up the good work. Hey, Nancy, of course, is such a fantastic ambassador for the banking world, for the United States, actually. You can be an ambassador for EWTN if you are so inclined. If you'd like to join the EWTN family, come on board and be a EWTN media missionary. We've got them all over the country, all over the world, I think. What you do is you kind of affiliate with EWTN and you become our local ambassador, our local representative. You you go through our print and electronic media to reach your parishes, reach your communities. And it's a very cool kind of volunteer way to become a part of the EWTN family. I have a friend here in the Southland, Michelle, who is a very, very zealous EWTN representative. We met Joanne from New England. She came through here, wanted to see our studios because she is an EWTN media missionary in her area. So I think that's a really great and noble affiliation you should have. And to find out how to do it, just go to EWTNmissionaries.com and they'll put you through all the questions and answers that you need to qualify for that very, very important prestigious position. You can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic. Join our family. See the pictures. We're going to have a picture of Nancy here in the studio. We're going to post it today and maybe any links that we made mention of in our conversation today. How are we doing on our Facebook family, Jimmy G?
We are 100 away from hitting 2,000,
right,
which would be a nice milestone.
1,000 a year.
You have already liked our page, encourage someone else to like our page. We'll get 2,000 just like that.
Yeah, just overnight. Yeah. Overnight. If we keep getting this caliber of guest on our into our studio,
absolutely,
I'm sure our fan club will grow. Hey, coming up next is Barbara McGuigan with 2 hours of The Good Fight. So stay tuned for that. She always has great pro-life dialogue going on. And next week, I've got another great guest, Dr. Louise Dunn, who is with the New Hope Helpline here in the Tower of Hope. It's a 24-hour helpline that's been carried over from Reverend Schuller's day. It's the only thing that's really been carried over, and it's fascinating. She's been there since the beginning. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about anything else you want to talk about. Just give us a call and join our conversation next week, like Marianne and Anne-Marie. They were very similar, so I got them a little bit confused. But mostly, we want you guys to stay tuned again with us and stay with us for next week's show, same day, same time, and you will hear more good news from our good faith. Until then, I am Peggy Normandin, but you know you can always just call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.